Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go, bend down the hatches. It's Tuesday, and it's the American Sports History Podcast to take center stage. I know the Cleveland Browns are in the playoffs. They're down in Houston this weekend. The Cleveland Cavaliers can have their problems. The Guardians haven't started spring training yet. We're about a month away from that one. And move over to the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. Peter Ray's the host of this one, a mentor, a brother, and a friend of me. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing in cold Los Angeles. It was colder here last night in Los Angeles than it was in Philadelphia, believe it or not. That's a story for another day, and I'm not a meteorologist. 347-205-9631 gets you to the front. Anything after that, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So, Peter, as I lay this thing down for you, the threes, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And don't. And I know Alice has got the radios all over the place on this one, her favorite guest. Take it away, my friend, as I man the boards.
Hi, Mark. I'm doing well. I have a YouTube channel. It's my name, Peter, J.REA. You're absolutely right. Tonight's guest played Major League Baseball from 1971 to 1981 with the Chicago Cubs, Oakland A's, L.A. Dodgers, and San Francisco Giants. He's tied for 79th all-time in career stolen bases with Dave Collins, 395. He won World Series titles in 1973 and 74 with the Oakland A's. Two-time American League stolen base leader in 1974 and 76. More than 1,000 hits. First Oakland A's DH, won a National League title with the Dodgers in 78. He led the American League three times in total chances per game, twice in putouts, once an assist from the outfield on a double play. Welcome to the show again for the 35th time, Mr. Bill North.
Hey, Peter. How's your life?
It's fine. Wonderful having you on the show. How was your Christmas with your family in Los Angeles?
Oh, man, I wish I was Mark admits to the weather, man. I'll tell you this. One of my sayings is that if I believed in coming back, I'd come back on one or two things. A weatherman with a 50-cent piece that I could flip in the air, predict the weather, and get paid for it, or my granddaughters.
Aw.
Because they live really good.
You had a good time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you said you're going to be on the Oakland with the Oakland A's Fan Fest. Where and when is that?
That's on February 24th in Oakland. And, well, of course, but yeah, they invited me down, and we're going to have a good time. I'm not quite sure format's going to be like, but I'm willing to dive in. You know me, Peter. Take a chance. Columbus did.
February 24th.
Yeah.
Oakland A's Fan Fest. Very good. Look forward to hearing about that. I'm sure the old-timers will enjoy, especially seeing Bill Norris representing the coolest MLB team of all time, the Oakland A's from the early 1970s. Yeah, that'll be wonderful.
You keep telling me that, Peter. I'm starting to believe it.
I watched recently Game 2 of the 72 World Series before you came to the A's. That was the beginning of the dynasties. You completed the second and third. Catfish Hunter against Ross Grimsley. A's won 2-1 to go up 2-0 in the series. Both one on the road. Joe Rudy had his big catch. Jackie Robinson's last public appearance, and he was talking about his hope for a black manager. Catfish Hunter had a single and an RBI in the game, scoring George Hendrick. Now, funny thing happened. Reggie Jackson was at the game. He was hurt, and Kurt Gowdy said, "Oh, look at Reggie Jackson in his street clothes in the dugout. That might be the first time since Connie Mack was in street clothes in the dugout in a MLB game." I thought, "Wow, I wonder if anybody else had compared Reggie Jackson to Connie Mack."
That's really reaching right there.
Oh, boy, pretty funny. Yeah, now in this book, Dynastic, Bombastic, Reggie, and Fantastic, Reggie Rowley, Catfish, and Charlie Finley's Swingin' A's by Jason Turbo, I was reading about The 73 World Series, A's met. You were hurt, but and game two, Mike Andrews made a couple errors, and then Charlie Finley wanted Andrews and the team doctor to declare him medically unfit, so he would not be able to play. So they could add Manny Trio, I think, to the roster. And it talks here about this confrontation between Dick Williams and Charlie Finley. And Dick Williams said, "Charlie, you are wrong. You are dead damn wrong. You're getting rid of a man because of physical errors, which means you're getting rid of him because he's a human being." I thought that was interesting. Right here. And then slowly rumors began to build that Finley was trying to take Andrews off the roster. Reggie Jackson, Vida Blue, Bill North, and Dick Green had all been in or near the trainer's room at some time during Andrews' examination. And then talks about how...
I was in there, yeah.
So you heard
that. Yeah.
Okay. And then there's a quote by Kenny Holtzman. "Believe me, that was the wrong bunch to get angry. That son of a gun, if he could do it to him, he could do it to all of us. If he doesn't like our performance on the field, he can get rid of us in a minute." So... anyway, that was. Do you want any comment on that situation?
Well, it was kind of. It was rude, is what it was, and I'm not really into the manipulations and the foibles of Charlie Finley, of which there were thousands. That was that one right there was a little off the hook, and Mike. That really hurt him bad. Yeah.
Game three was in New York, Shea Stadium, 48 degrees, 20 miles an hour winds. Felix Mian said, quote, "If it gets this cold in Puerto Rico, everybody dies." That was a good.
Yeah.
That was pretty fun.
If it gets that cold in Puerto Rico, there's going to be a whole bunch of other stuff going on, too.
Now, the A's won that series, and then they had a victory celebration at Vince's restaurant near the Coliseum. And then Reggie Jackson was named – no, not Reggie Jackson. It was let's see, 73. No, yeah, 73, he was named MVP. And then Bert Campanaris, there was some talk about Campanaris, and it says everybody was having a good time right up until Bert Campanaris grabbed a table knife and went after Reggie Jackson. Sal Bando grabbed Campanaris, and Jackson remained unstabbed.
I don't remember that.
Huh?
But I don't remember that, but it sounds about right.
Pretty crazy, yeah. Now, let's see here. Oh, now back to your teammates. I almost thought we'd go through the continue with that. It's the 78 Dodgers. What do you remember about Bert Hooten?
Bert Hooten.
Mm-hmm.
We came through the minor leagues together with the Cubs. Yeah. And he had that knuckle curve. He could pitch. I saw one of the hardest hit balls ever in my life off of that knuckle curve. When Greg Luzinski sent it right back through the box, if it had hit Bert Hooten, it would have killed him.
Mm.
That's what I remember, that ball that Luzinski hit off of Hooten. Boy, that ball was hit hard. One of the hardest hit balls. You talking about would have went through his head.
Mm.
Yeah, but he was a good steady pitcher. He'd give you 200, 250 every year, you know, and he went out there. When his
okay.
was out.
Tommy John.
TJ. Yeah, he was one of them tricky little pitchers. I'm not going to say about what he used to do. Different, but he could pitch. He had Tommy John surgery.
Hey, Doug
did after him. But
Doug
yeah, he was a good teammate too. Yeah.
Doug Rao. Rao.
Same thing as Tommy. Yeah. He was a Texas boy and pitched too. He was about the fourth starter. I think, yeah.
Rick Rodin.
Yeah, Rick was he's competitive.
Yeah.
And he had good stuff. They had good pitching. We had wonderful pitching back then. And then you had the next guy you're going to ask about.
Bob Welch.
Bobby Welch. Bobby Welch is my boy. He's a good kid, good man. You know, I remember when he came up. Yeah, he came up that he was up at 78 when I was there, and he you know, Rick Sutcliffe came up, and Dave Stewart and Joe Simon, Pedro Guerrero came up that same year. Yeah, but Rick Roden,
Bob Welch.
Bobby Welch. Bobby Welch is competitive. I remember the World Series when he struck out Reggie Jackson. And that was one of the most poignant periods in my whole baseball experience. And I was standing in center field when they were having that contest. And there were 53,000 people standing. And the intensity was so cut it with a knife. And I'm standing in center field. And I said to myself, I said, this is what baseball is all about right here, this moment here, because it was just palpable. And I said, last thing in the world is going to happen. It's either going to be a home run or a strikeout. Last thing in the world is going to happen is going to be a pop-up to the center fielder. And, yep. And it ended up being a strikeout, but I totally – you know, I said, if I've seen that before. If you miss by 4 inches on that damn thing right there, you hit it off the back of the bullpen. And then in a later game, he missed by 4 pitches, I mean 4 inches, and Reggie hit it off the back of that bullpen. You know, but that was a competitive moment and one of my most poignant moments ever being in the game. With that intensity and that moment was so intense. Yeah.
Yeah, you hear. It's referred to a lot. They show it a lot. And I guess Reggie fouled off at least 5 pitches.
Yeah, and then he got that one. He got that one right in on the inside. It was a contest. I'm standing out in center field. And I'm saying, damn. It was a hell of a, yeah. Like I say, it was one of the most important moments in my career. Never seen anything like that before. Yeah.
They went at it. Yeah, mano a mano, as they say in Spanish.
Well, but I it wasn't so much that. It was that, because it evoked the crowd reaction. The crowd reaction was what I had never seen before. It was 53,000 people standing on their feet, yelling, hollering, screaming, and making, it was almost like a physical presence. You could feel the intensity around you, and that was the thing. The combatants were. The ones that instigated that, but it was the kind of thing that I had never felt a moment like that, and it still rings in my ears and sits in my mind to this day.
Yeah, that was the highlight for the Dodgers in that series.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We won the first two.
Right.
But we were winning the second game pretty good, and we ended up towards the end of the game, seeing the tying run in the hole. And those guys started to hit. And I told them, I said, pitching is true in this series. Those guys over there, because I just got over there from the American League. I said, when them guys start to hit, you better bring your slugging shoes. And they went through us like a hot knife through butter the next 4 games.
Okay, Terry Forster.
Terry Forster, good teammate, good man. I'm glad he was on my team because he used to be over there with Goose Gossage in Chicago, and that wasn't no way to make a living facing both of them as a reliever. Yeah. They could both run it up there pretty good. No, you didn't have to run up on them. They was going to get there.
Yeah, and years later, David Letterman had Forster on the show. Forster put on weight, and he called him a fat tub of goo.
Did he? Terry's a pretty big boy. Terry's a big boy. He was in shape back then. He could, hey, man, he's one of them you really wouldn't want to get locked in a room with. And
hey, Charlie,
him being mad at you.
Charlie Huff.
Knuckleball. Charlie was a southerner. He used to wear them leisure suits and them white patent leather shoes and that kind of thing. He's a good teammate, too. I like Charlie's good teammate.
Dave Stewart.
Young man, he came up. Boy, you know, look at those guys that came up. Rick Russell, Joe Simon was so-so. But Pedro Guerrero, Dave Stewart, and Rick Sutcliffe. And they had coming out of their minor leagues that year. Both of them, I mean, all of them went on to have pretty good careers.
Well, especially Stewart, right?
Yeah, but Sutcliffe was pretty good, too, now.
Right. Especially after he got traded from Cleveland to the Cubs in 84.
Yeah. And Guerrero was a big hitter. When he came up, when you come up, you try to do things with the ball. He's trying to pull it too much. But when he learned how to go to that right center field, boy, he could hit him. Strong man. Good man, too. I enjoyed being around him as when he was a kid, yeah.
Anything else on Rick Sutcliffe?
Yeah, competitor, serious competitor. Good dude, too.
Okay, you moved on to the Giants in 79. You had two managers, Joe Altobelli. Was Altobelli fired during the season?
I'm not sure.
And then Dave Bristol.
Yeah.
What do you remember about Joe Altobelli?
Joe was a good man, kind of quiet. He had been a third base coach all his career. But I don't think that we were very good as a team. And, I was a center field. I had a pretty good year there in that year. You know, I think that's the year I set the stolen base record for the Giants was 58.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's a good number.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on Dave Bristol?
Well, let's continue on.
Okay, Willie McCovey.
Stretch. Come on, man. One of the most feared hitters I ever saw. And he did all of that damage when nobody wanted to pitch to him. They were all trying to stay away from the strike zone on him, and he still did all that damage, 500-some on run, over 1,500 RBI. Oh, man. Willie McCovey was a monster.
Did he ever talk about the last out of the 62 World Series?
Nope. No, I didn't think we didn't talk too much about his outs.
but he hit the ball hard.
He had a printout of all in chronological order and by how many times he got them of the pitchers he hit all of his home runs off of. And you saw Koufax and Drysdale and Warren Spahn and Bob Gibson. Stretch used to get them all. and hit big ones off the big picture. You know, pitchers.
Yeah, they got McCovey coaching
it. It's amazing how those guys, Mays and Aaron and all of them, how often they got those really, really good pitchers. You know, and I mean, Robin Roberts and Steve Banks got them, Billy Williams. Hey, man, those good big-time hitters that are all up in the record as far as home runs and RBIs, they got Koufax and Drysdale and Spahn and all of them. They got them good.
And there's a
It wasn't all off of those four starters. Now they got them first and second starters too.
They could hit the best.
That's it.
And they still have McCovey Cove named after William McCovey, the body of water just outside.
I can understand it.
Yeah, pretty cool.
I can understand it. We used to play in the place they used to call Candlestick.
And was that pretty bad?
And that last part, it was called other things by the players.
Uh-huh. And you signed as a free agent knowing you'd play half your games at Candlestick Park.
Yeah, hey, man. I had to go where I could.
Right. Okay. And Willie McCovey got you involved in the cultural scene in the San Francisco Bay Area with some famous musicians.
Oh, yeah, He had acquaintances with high society down there, which is something that a lot of people didn't know, him being from Alabama, a southern boy. But he was very personable. And one time I went to an event with him, and I met Baryshnikov. and which was kind of like a feather. Yeah, you know,
sure.
I was interested in meeting him. He's nice, and then Boss Skaggs, who was one of my guys, and,
uh-huh.
and you know, I met him with Stretch too, and yeah, hey, we had a good time. I love to hang out with him. Yeah,
Johnny LeMaster.
Johnny LeMaster was a. He was, they picked on him a lot, the fans and that. But he was a good player. He's a heck of a shortstop, a hell of an athlete. But, yeah, I enjoyed playing. He was good to me, too. He was a good teammate. Yeah.
One of your good friends, Darrell Evans.
Doody, they call him Doody because he looked like Howdy Doody.
Uh-huh.
But he's one of my favorite people in the world, and just an inspiration and a good teammate. I talk to him once in a while. We get on the phone for a couple of hours. Mm. In fact, I'm about due to talk to him. Like me and you, Peter, we could get on the phone and stay a long time, too.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
My friend.
Yeah, I've had him on the show, and he's a good interview, but boy, yeah, he's somebody that I really appreciate having been around in my life, and I truly appreciate it, yeah.
He's a good dude.
He's a good dude. Couldn't have said it any more concise than that.
Now, you stole 58 bases, as you said, that year in 79. Did you see any – was there any difference in stealing in the National League compared to the American League?
No.
No.
It wasn't stealing. It was taken. They knew. They knew what was going to happen. You know, okay. I wasn't biased to one league or the other. Whoever was that 90, that base 90 feet away was what I wanted. Now, give me that.
Okay, Jack Clark.
Jack Clark, also one of the most fierce hitters I ever saw. Jack, when Jack was batting, when he was hitting, you could be coming down out of the clubhouse and not even be on the field, and you could tell who was hitting when Jack was up because the ball sounded different coming off of his bat. He had that swing that was so explosive at the point of contact that it sounded different. There's, you know, Bo Jackson was that way. McCovey was that way. There were a few of them that way. And but Jackie could hit that ball hard, boy. I'm telling you.
Mike Ivey.
That's my buddy. Mike was all right. He was a good teammate. Got to know his parents, and they were good too. And yeah, Mike was a Goldman boy. He's from Georgia, Stone Mountain, Georgia. Good man.
Larry Herndon.
Quiet Larry. Larry was, you know, all those guys were pretty good dudes. Larry was, you know, he stayed with me when he came over. He stayed at the house. You know, I like to get him someplace to go and where they could not be in a hotel and be able to eat right. And so he was one of those that came and stayed with me till he got settled in town, and then his family came. He's a good kid, and kind of shy and quiet, but he was a good player.
Roger Metzger.
Roger and I came through the Cubs organization, too. He had gotten his fingers cut off. You know, he lost his fingers to a saw.
Hmm.
And, but he still played. You know, he had that little tail on his throw after that, but which is me is a study in courage. You know, he had lost the tips of his four fingers.
Wow. On his throwing hand or glove hand?
On his throwing hand.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Picked that ball up, though. Yeah.
Hmm. Hmm. Bill Madlock.
You know about Bill Madlock. Dog can hit. Dog was a good teammate, too. We almost got into one when I was with the Dodgers. We were advancing towards each other before. I'm not sure that would have been any fun. He was kind of thick, but, you know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. But,
well, he played.
He's a good teammate. He could really hit.
He played third. Did you have an incident on the pace pass?
It might have been when he was with Pittsburgh.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It had to be because, when I came back over with the Dodgers or something like that.
And you came in hard at third and he tagged you hard?
No, he was at second then.
Oh. You came into second hard and he tagged you hard?
No, well, I don't know. There were some words exchanged.
Heat of the moment competition.
Hey, man. You know, it ain't for the weak of heart.
Hector Cruz.
Cruzy. Yeah, good guy. Yeah, yeah. He's one of them Cruz brothers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's the right-hander here. He can go to the right center, too. He's a good player. Yeah,
and
always had a smile. Always had a smile, yeah.
You were reunited with Vida Blue on the Giants.
Me and Blue Boy, we was out everywhere together. You know, and hey, man, that's my boy. You know how I feel about him.
Yeah.
And God bless him.
God bless Vida Blue.
Yeah. God bless them all. Yeah.
Another good dude. Yeah, well, that's why it's good that we're doing these shows, keeping these guys' memories alive. That's why I love history, keeping people alive through memory.
Hey, we're out of time again, ain't we?
We are out of time, yes. Our guest has been the leadoff hitter and center fielder for the coolest MLB team of all time, coolest and greatest, the Oakland A's from the early 1970s. And he's my dear wife Alice's favorite podcast guest because he's a good man with a good heart. Bill, do you have any final words tonight for our audience?
Time flies when I'm around you, Peter. The next thing I know, I looked up and there's gone. And I enjoy it. Thank you, fans, for for listening to us. Sometimes we're better than others, but we enjoy being here. Thank you so much. God bless you all.
Oh, thank you, Bill. What a gift having you on the show. Yeah, because you guys, like I said, it's my favorite. You guys, the 70s, and you were the coolest team, and you were a tremendous player, exciting center fielder, and stealing base, exciting on the base pass and in center, and all those memorable teammates you had, Catfish Hunter and Reggie Jackson and Sal Bando and all of them. So thanks so much for coming on again.
Thank you for having me, Peter. Good Lord willing, we'll do it again.
Yes, in 2 weeks from tonight, we'll have Bill North again, and that'll be another gift. Next week, we have Matthew DiBiase. We're talking NFL history to a couple of the greatest NFL coaches of all time, Buddy Parker and the Detroit Lions in the 1950s, and Mike Shanahan and the Denver Broncos in the 1990s. Dear listener, may the road rise to meet you. May the wind be at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face and rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Good night, everybody. Thanks again so much, Mr. Bill North.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you. Wonderful.